Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Monday, March 4th. I'm your host, Stephen Overly. The Biden administration fired two new shots in its tech war with China last week. The first, an executive order meant to restrict China's access to data on Americans. And the second, potential new rules for connected cars made with Chinese technology. Now, of course, there are politics at play here. President Biden is back on the campaign trail and needs to appear tough on China. But the White House says it's doing this in the name of national security. So I called up Ben Buchanan, Biden's special advisor on artificial intelligence, and asked him why these latest actions are necessary and how they fit into the president's AI agenda. Here's our conversation. Ben, welcome back to Politico Tech.
Thanks for having me back.
A recent White House executive order directs the Justice Department to impose regulations that protect U.S. data from being accessed by foreign governments of concern. What data transfers are happening today that you all are trying to stop?
The executive order covers six categories of data, but it's fair to say some of the ones of greatest concern are the transfer of genomic data, personal health information, biometric data, financial data, and geolocation data. Right now, it is perfectly legal, and there's very few restrictions on the transfer of this data, and there's actually not a lot of official government visibility into the transfer of this data. So we're confident the data is being transferred, is being accessed by countries of concern in a way that, it, in fact, raises concerns. And this executive order is meant to set up a process through which we'd remedy and mitigate that risk.
So is the idea here to effectively stop U.S. companies from selling or transferring data to Chinese companies?
The rulemaking process that this executive order kicks off will define the exact contours of this. But essentially, this is meant to stop the bulk transfer of certain kinds of data to countries of concern. And what bulk means, how much essentially reaches that threshold, depends on the type of data. So we expect it to be lower, for example, for genomic data than for financial data. And it will be decided through the rulemaking process. But essentially, it's meant to put a cap on large-scale transfer of Americans' data to countries of concern.
And does existing law give you kind of the powers you need to enforce and regulate in this space, or is this something that may ultimately require Congress to get involved?
The president has called all along for Congress to pass bipartisan comprehensive privacy legislation. We, of course, reiterate that call. But the president, with this executive order, is showing that he's not just going to wait for Congress to act. So this executive order is based in a law called IEPA, which gives the president power to take actions like this to address part of the problem. I wouldn't say we have the capacity to address all of the problem right now, given Congress's lack of action on privacy. But this is the president taking bold action to address the part of the problems that he can under executive authority.
The administration took what seems like a step toward blocking Chinese cars from the American market. The Commerce Department is looking at possible security risks of Chinese-made cars that connect to the internet. What evidence has the White House seen that this technology is being abused?
So we have one executive order on data security, then totally separately, though the timing was, of course, similar. We have beginning of rulemaking from the Commerce Department on Chinese vehicles. And here the concern is that, as you know very well on the tech side here, connected vehicles today gather tons and tons of information. Some of the same data security concerns that animate the first executive order also animate this rulemaking about the capacity for foreign companies and foreign governments to access data on Americans through connected vehicles or the cybersecurity risks of connected vehicles and the like. To be clear, it has nothing to do with whether or not the car is electric or gas-powered. It's about the connection and data collection by the vehicle.
You know, you obviously in your role sort of spend all, you know, or a lot of your time, I would imagine, assessing risks, getting a problematic national security concern sort of put on your plate. Why automobiles?
Well, I think the key thing here with the automobile piece, the connected vehicle piece, is just the potential scale of this, right? So we're very interested in securing Americans' data, protecting Americans' privacy, managing cybersecurity, national security risks. And the scale of automobiles is so large, it's just not something we can ignore, given how many cars there are in the United States and given the potential influx that could be coming here. So we've got to get ahead of these national security risks and investigate them. And that's what the rulemaking process does. The rulemaking process really makes sure we're gathering the information we need in order to address any potential risks here that could come from Chinese connected vehicles.
Speaking of that influx, one of the statements President Biden made about this was this idea that China wants to dominate the auto market, flood the U.S. with vehicles, and that poses national security concerns. To what extent, though, is this about kind of protecting U.S. automakers and the U.S. share of the global auto market?
I think President Biden has no problem with competition from abroad. And again, President Biden, you know, says all the time, and I think backs it up with his actions, that he bets on the American workers. He knows the American worker can compete and can win with our vehicles and with our products more generally. So I think there's the animating force of this is the national security concern. We're not banning all foreign cars. We're not trying to crowd out all competition. Separate from the national security concerns, China certainly has a whole program to subsidize their vehicles and all of that. But the authority that's coming to bear here is a national security authority. And I think the rulemaking process thus far has showed there are legitimate national security concerns that are in focus independent of any economic effects.
I was curious in, you know, looking at this proposed rulemaking, the degree to which some of the concern is American automakers or foreign automakers that do sell in the U.S. right now using parts and technology from China. We saw this in telecom, for instance, concerns about telecom infrastructure using equipment made in China. How much of this is aimed at sort of that potential risk?
I think it's fair to say that we know that it's just not about the manufacturer of the car, that when you have a car today that's incredibly complicated with tons and tons of different parts and they're dialing back home to different manufacturers, there's a broader risk framework, or in the cybersecurity lingo, attack surface, that we have to mitigate. And the rulemaking here and the process in the White House here across the government that we're working through looks more generally at that ecosystem. So it's not just about the manufacturer, though it is in part about that. It's also about the components, as you mentioned. And we need to make sure that, you know, even vehicles made by longstanding American companies are secure from hacking and secure from some of these connected data risks. So no doubt about it, it's broader than just one country and broader than just one part of the supply chain.
You know, my colleagues here at Politico interviewed Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo. She made a comment to them that she would consider banning Chinese firms that access U.S. data if Congress gave her that authority, but she doesn't have that right now. Does the White House support expanding the Commerce Department's powers to do that?
I am not enough of a legislative wonk to know where different powers would be, but I think it's fair to say the president has said time and again that we have to have comprehensive privacy legislation to protect Americans' data and to keep Americans safe online and all of that. So I think I'm probably not the expert on which department needs the authorities to enforce that, but I think it's fair to say that our commitment to privacy here and our call to Congress to act on privacy and data security is in no way diminished by the actions we've taken. If anything, the actions we've taken this week are meant to underscore the urgency of that need.
Speaking of kind of comprehensive data privacy protections, we just had a recent episode of the podcast about how, you know, U.S. government and law enforcement agencies buy personal data from the commercial market, typically without people being aware of how that data is being used. Will the Biden administration put limits on the sale of personal information to the U.S. government?
To be totally candid with you, I know this is a debate. This is not something that is in the remit of the White House Special Advisor for AI. So we have intelligence oversight folks and all of that. But I'm not one of those people, and I'm not part of the process there. I think there's ongoing debate there. In the AI executive order, we did have a mention of this issue, but it's a separate policy process.
Well, as you said, you know, you're the president's special advisor on artificial intelligence. How does this recent executive order and this proposed rulemaking on autos fit into the administration's AI strategy?
Yeah, it's a really important question. One of the reasons I've continued to work on this is because even in the data security executive order itself, we talk about how protecting data is even more important in the age of AI. So I think there's good reasons to protect Americans' data, good reasons to protect Americans' privacy if we didn't have AI at all. But given the capacity for AI systems to do just this incredible large-scale data analysis, pulling together tons of disparate information, linking individuals or patterns that otherwise wouldn't have been linked before, we think that underscores still more the urgency of protecting Americans' data. So that's, again, mentioned explicitly in the Data Security Executive Order. And I think that's in part an animating factor for why we're doing this work.
Is the end goal when it comes to AI then to sort of restrict access to data in order to hinder the development of AI or the processing of that data?
It's worth underscoring the data that we're talking about here is such a small fraction of the overall data in the universe, right? It's very important data. It's very personal data. But I don't think, given the scope and scale of economic and commercial AI systems, this is going to stop that. But what this will stop is it will stop the use of AI for the purposes of counterintelligence and the like. So take, for example, geolocation information. If you can buy geolocation, if you're a foreign intelligence service and you can buy geolocation information on tons and tons of Americans, that is a counterintelligence goldmine. And you can extract information from that in a way you never could before because of the power of AI systems. So that's what we're trying to stop here, is the sale of this data that would then be used to train AI systems that are very relevant and very concerning if they were to be in the hands of our adversaries from a national security perspective.
We'll be right back. You know, when we last had you on the podcast, President Biden had just issued the executive order on AI. One of the requirements in there was that developers have to report on their training and testing for the most advanced AI models. How is that going?
Good. So the executive order, as you know, had a ton of deliverables in it. The one that you described was a 90-day deliverable. So within 90 days, the Commerce Department had to set up a system to essentially compel this information from frontier AI developers doing very, very high-end and powerful AI work. The Commerce Department met that deadline. So 90 days from the AI executive order was the end of January. And that information, officially they're called surveys. Those surveys from the Commerce Department have gone out. And we are getting that, expect to get that information back. I don't know what's come back yet or not. I think there's still a little bit of process there. But we are on track, not just with that deliverable, but across the board.
I was going to ask because, you know, we've heard from tech developers who are not necessarily happy with the reporting requirement or feel it is too onerous or too invasive. I'm curious what response you've received from the AI community, and are they actually following through and filing reports?
Yeah, we have not gotten significant pushback. It's worth noting this reporting requirement kicks in when folks are developing AI systems with more than 10 to 26 flops. So realistically speaking, I'd be surprised if that's more than three, maybe four companies in the United States in 2024. So this is not a particularly broad requirement. It's a very, very narrow requirement focused on just the top echelon of the industry. Those folks are probably spending something like $500 million in order to train a system of that scale. All of the people who would be doing it at that scale have already committed to the president that they're going to be doing the safety testing anyway. So this is just compelling them to report those safety tests before it's released to the public so that we can have confidence the systems are safe, secure, and trustworthy.
Do those reporting requirements include any disclosure of how companies acquire their data or whether they sell or share that data? It just occurs to me in the context of this overall conversation about data security that the data these AI developers hold would be perhaps pretty powerful.
The data security executive order does not apply to data that is already public. So it is often a different set. My understanding of a lot of the frontier AI companies, when they train their systems, they're training on these very large curated public data sets like Common Crawl and the like. So that is actually a different category of data. When you're talking about training something like GPT-5 or Claude 2 or whatnot, that's my understanding, at least, is that's a different category of data than the data we're catching in the executive order, which is by definition non-public data collected on Americans.
Does it cover then, you know, data brokers who collect data from, say, social media or from cell phones and some of these other sort of open sources and then package and sell that?
There's a lot of nuance here, and it depends on the rulemaking process. But essentially, the gist of it is, if it's data that's on the internet that's public, like a social media post or any kind of expressive content, nothing that's expressive is covered. So that's all out of scope.
Got it.
If it is aggregations of tons of Americans' geolocation information, that we expect that to be in scope. So there's a little bit of nuance here, but bottom line, expressive content is out, not covered, and geolocation data and like much more likely to be in depending on the particulars.
And then obviously the AI executive order contains a lot of deadlines. As you said, you've met the ones so far. What are the next steps from the administration on AI?
I think probably the next big deliverable we can all look forward to is the release of the Office of Management and Budget memo that issues guidance to agencies, binding guidance to agencies on how they're actually going to use AI. And that's due 150 days from the release of the executive order. So we can expect that by the end of March. That is on schedule. And that's where I think we have to practice what we preach. We talk about AI use being safe, secure, and trustworthy. We talk about what it means to use it responsibly, to use it to deliver for taxpayers and the American people. And I think that memo is where we'll really lay the marker down for what that looks like. And then another deliverable a little bit further down the line, at the 270-day mark, so that's the end of July, we owe national security memorandum, which governs how the national security community will use AI, how we will make sure we're putting AI to use in a responsible way to advance Americans' national security, but also how we're going to counter those efforts by our adversaries. I expect some of that document will be unclassified, and of course, some of that document has to be classified, but that'll be by the end of July.
And this guidance that's coming in March for federal agencies, can you give us any preview of what it's going to tell them they should be doing on AI?
Well, we released a pretty detailed preview for public comment 2 days after the executive order. And we've taken tons of comments in and we're revising it based on those comments. I wouldn't want to comment on the revisions yet, but there is a preview out there. And we were very grateful to get a lot of public comments from a wide range of stakeholders on that subject.
President Biden is delivering his State of the Union address later this week. How is AI going to play into it?
I think the State of the Union is, of course, a speech that's very much in flux until the last minute. So I wouldn't want to commit to anything. But I think it's fair to say, given the priority that President Biden has placed on safe, secure, and trustworthy AI, and given the extent of the administration actions here, I think it's fair to say we can expect a mention. But it's up to the president what he says.
Well, Ben, appreciate you being back here on Politico Tech.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.